Good afternoon. My name is Allison Dunn. I am the host of this Deliberate Directions podcast. Our guest today is Chris Farrell. He's joining us from St. Paul, Minnesota. He is a marketplace senior economist contributor at the American Public Media Group. He is the author of Unretirement and The New Frugality. I'm glad I could say that word. And then just published a brand new book called The Purpose and a Paycheck, which is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Chris, thanks so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. How's the weather in St. Paul today?
Ah, it's beautiful.
It looks like it is. I can see it behind you.
Yes.
Excellent. So I have an awesome, very multi-generational coaching clientele, and the topic that you kind of have a specialty in is very near and dear to my heart for a variety of reasons. What sparked your interest in the topic of boomers coming back to work?
So part of it was, so I'm a journalist, journalistic career, mm-hmm. and there have been two strands in my journalistic career. Okay. One is covering personal finance. If you think about personal finance over the past 25 years, a major theme has been the aging of the baby boom population. Are they going to have enough money when they retire? They haven't saved enough. And the sort of demographics of aging, this is going to be really bad when the boomers get older because they just don't have enough money. Yeah, my other strand is economics. And the economics has been the demographics of aging. We're going to end up with too many of these dependent elderly being supported by too few young people. And therefore, the underlying dynamism of the U.S. economy is going to erode. And so, basically, population getting older is a bad thing. That has been sort of the common perspective. And if you think about it, when people think about older people, what do they think? You know, they're stuck in their ways. They can't learn new things. They don't want to deal with technology. And of course, in a lot of organizations, the question has been, maybe unstated, is when are you going to retire? Mm-hmm. And there was a part of me that just rebelled against this whole perspective, and I started doing some research. And there is a whole body of scholarly research out there about how people get more creative as they get older, about how people get more productive as they get older, the rewards to experience. And then, if you think about this thing that people haven't saved enough, well, if they keep working and they keep earning money and they keep paying taxes, that gives them the opportunity to save more, or their savings will go longer. And so I started going deeper and deeper into it. And what this has really become is an older population in the workplace and starting their own businesses is the most underappreciated asset in the United States. And if you want to think about rapid growth, and you want to think about robust growth and inclusiveness and community, then you have to start looking at people 50 and over, 60 and over, 70 and over, very differently. And they have a lot to contribute to our economy and our society. So in a sense, this was start out as, look, they can offer a lot to our economy. They can just really help our economy grow faster. But it has also become, they have so much to offer our society. Why are we pushing the people to the sidelines? Just because they've hit some chronological date.
Right. I feel really grateful that my father took over his father's business, and he is in, certainly the baby boomer generation, well into his late 70s at this point, and still he goes to the office 2, 3, sometimes 5 days a week, depending on, how much, project work he has, but he has been the most innovative in his entire, basically, entrepreneurial career in the last decade. By far,
right.
He's created more designs. He is a designer of birding enthusiast products. So he creates designs for bird feeders, bird houses, and anything that brings our feathered friends into our backyard. And I think that his level of SKUs, the retail products that he's produced, has been thousands, as opposed to maybe a couple of hundred in the first 4 decades of the business itself. Which is, crazy.
And she did, and this echoes, several years ago, I went out to, got an airplane, flew to New York City, Museum of Modern Art, and there was an exhibit of Henri Matisse. And it was about his cutouts. And these are those famous, they're large swimming pools, the Blue Nude series, you know, the ones that we all kind of, that we think about Matisse, and it was done later in his life. He was starting around age 74. He died at age 84. And is considered the peak of his creativity, just like with your father. Mm-hmm. The last decade of his life, he's in his most creative. Now, he was creative throughout his life.
Right.
But he kept building on his experience and was willing to try new things and connect the dots. And the thing is, your father and Matisse, these are not exceptional people. They are exceptional, of course. But it's not like we can always find somebody to highlight, you know, oh, isn't that remarkable? But the thing is, it's so normal. It's really about being given the opportunity to exercise your creativity. Mm-hmm. So one of the things when you're talking to one of your clients, and if you're one of your clients is creative in their 20s and their 30s, they're going to be creative in their 60s and their 70s and their 80s. And so it's about creating the opportunity for them to be creative. Mm-hmm. And then there's research that I cite in the book, productivity. And we're going to go to a Mercedes-Benz truck factory in Germany. And there are these German scholars got complete access to it. And they were studying productivity. Now, productivity is about, the way they measured it was making mistakes, you know, the error rate, which is a big deal on the assembly line. And what they found is that productivity peaked around the age that they retired, about age 65, because, yes, some of their physical abilities deteriorated, but their experience and their ability to connect the dots and their ability to make judgments under stress improved. And if you think about it, how many people do you know that with time their judgment gets better? Mm-hmm. They can connect the dots. There's that wonderful commencement address by the late Steve Jobs at Stanford University in 2005. And what he highlights in there is the importance of being to connect the dots to creativity. But you can't connect the dots until you can look back. And the one way of describing connect the dots is that's wisdom. And I think that's, with experience, that's what a lot of people can do.
Absolutely. You you use the term unretirement, which I love, and I'm going to give you a term which you probably have already heard, but I have a client who is refusing to call it retirement. He's calling it rewirement.
Yes.
So restructuring to be able to connect the dots in a different way than maybe he has spent his entire career working for someone else doing. So starting his own business. So I love that. So what is unretirement to you?
So unretirement is, part of it is, how do we signal what we're talking about, right? Okay. So it's, I'm talking about a certain time, and you don't want to say seniors and, you know, older age, elderly. It gets all sort of mixed up there, right? So when Trevor and I use unretirement, is it kind of signals the time of life that we're talking about, but it also sort of says, well, you're still working. And you may be working part-time, flexible time, starting your own business, self-employed. So that's why I like the term unretirement. The British also like this term third age, which is not picked up in the United States, but that's a very common term in the United States.
What was the term you just said?
Third age.
Third age, okay.
Third age. So that's very popular in Britain. There's rewirement that you mentioned. There's refirement.
Okay.
All sort of, you know, playing on this notion. So you're sort of signaling, look, we're talking about, you know, the latter stages of life. Mm-hmm. But we don't want that image. If you say the word retirement, people automatically assume you're not working.
Right.
And they automatically have this image. It's a very powerful image of being on the golf course or walking through the national parks or, you know, embracing full-time leisure. Nothing wrong with being on the golf course or going to national parks, but this notion that you've said goodbye to your colleagues for the last time and all this skill and all this knowledge that you accumulated over the years, you just walked away from that to just sort of, you know, embrace leisure. And so that's why I don't want to use the term retirement. I want to say unretirement.
I love that. That is a good lead-in, because we're talking about not necessarily retirement. We're talking about actually continuing to work and contribute in some way. One of the statistics that we pulled up was that about a quarter of all new businesses started are started by people who are in their late 50s and early 60s in retirement age is what I would consider it. And that's twice the rate of 20-year-olds who are starting businesses.
Yes, and this is the most surprising aspect of this whole field about thinking, about reimagining, rethinking what it means to get older. And when I started this research, I wouldn't have thought about starting your own business. And part of what I would have thought is that's too risky.
Right.
You're tapping into your 401k to start a business. We know what the failure rate is. Do you really have that good an idea? Mm-hmm. And there are a couple things that are going on. First of all, the real value of what people have is the jargon term is their human capital, their knowledge and their skill. And so they've been in business, they've been in organizations, they have a knowledge, they have a skill, they're going to sell that knowledge and skill. So a lot of this is self-employment. The office, it's the home, or, mm-hmm. a room in the home, or joining a fairly low-fee co-sharing workspace or incubator. So, because you might want to be around some people. But again, it's not a huge outlay of money. Technology has lowered the cost of starting a business, managing a business, doing your invoicing, doing your billing, your accounting, all that kind of stuff. It eats time.
Yes, it does.
That's the real cost that you're paying. But it's not like you're having to buy a building and you're spending all this money on the physical space, and you have to hire all these people. And so it's really an exciting moment to think about. Many people take their passion. They take something that they've done over the years and they turn that passion into a business. And the thing is, there used to be the advice, well, don't do that. You're gonna ruin your passion. You're not longer gonna like this. But the other way of looking at it is, well, you do like it. And the second thing is, you really know the market. Because you've been in this market, and you have learned about this market, and you know who the customer is, and you know what the customer likes. And so actually, a passion can be a competitive advantage when you're starting a business. And most of the businesses, depending on whose numbers you're looking at, they're starting with 5,000 or less, or 1,000 or less. But you're not tapping the 401k. And by the way, don't tap 401k, don't take out a home equity loan to start your business. This is about leveraging your knowledge, leveraging your skill, and a little bit of money to get that business started. Test it out in the marketplace, see if you get much of a reaction, and then start building your business. And for many people, it's self-employment, or maybe they work in, with people, not formal partnerships, but they know some people that they like. So if there's a project that comes along and a graphic designer, who's been really good over the years, you bring them in for that project because they're fun to work with. But you don't have the formal paperwork. You just trust each other and you do a job together. And so it's a really fascinating time to be thinking about starting your own business. And we always think about youth, and this is nothing against youth.
Right.
If you go into one of these co-sharing workspaces, a lot of times what it is, the ads will be some young person, incredible abs running through the mountains of Colorado. And actually, when you look around, about half the people, they're 50 and over.
Right. That's funny. You've mentioned starting something based around a passion, which I've seen people do a pivot at some point to do that. What would you say, is that the most common motivator for someone to start a business at that stage?
I think yes. So, who knows what their percentage are. There's one group of people, they lose their job. You're 59 years old.
Right.
You lose your job. It's hard to get another job. And so you start your own business. So there are people that are pushed into it.
True.
There are also people who are pulled into it. You're getting older. You have an idea. Mm-hmm. You thought about it. And you do realize time is passing. And if you're going to do this, you might as well do it now. Mm-hmm. And so there's also that sort of, so it's a push or a pull. So a lot of times I get asked this question, do people work because they want to or because they have to, right? Because they need to.
Right.
And my answer is, for most people, it's both. Mm-hmm. They need to and they want to. Mm-hmm. They need the money, but they also want to do something that they feel good about, that they, that they are contributing to society, that they get up in the morning and they like their colleagues or they like what they're doing. And I think with entrepreneurship, a lot of it is you're doing something that you really do want to do, but at the same time, for most people, they also need that paycheck.
Right, right. I work with a lot of people and I connect with a lot of people who have started businesses. And it almost makes you, for me, sometimes wonder, are they just doing a hobby or are they doing a business? And sometimes they're the same thing. What steps do you recommend as setting a solid foundation for someone who does want to create a business?
So there's a couple of things. One, there's a group of people, what I just will call serial entrepreneurs. Right. This is what they do. Mm-hmm. And if you're a serial entrepreneur, it doesn't matter what your age is, you're going to start another business. And that's what you always find out. They sell their business, and then they sit around for a little while, and then they start talking to people, and they just start thinking, before you know it, they're going to start their own business. So that's the serial entrepreneur. Then there's a group of people, which I think is the most fascinating aspect of this starting a business later in life, which is starting a multi-generational business. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's very heavily in the artisan and craft businesses. Start going into business with your adult children, millennial children, Gen Xer children. And what is exciting about this is that the older adult, the boomer, is bringing some capital, some knowledge, some experience. The younger person is bringing some energy and, you know, new ideas. And the thing is, it's also an exit strategy for the older adult, because at some point they're going to turn the business over, or the younger adults are going to buy the business, whatever the arrangement is, but they're going to continue to do the business as the older adult retires or moves to, you know, more into the background of the business. And this is a really exciting trend. It's going on everywhere I go around the country. I run into it, because here's one of the really positive things that's happened in our society. Generations get along. And I love my father. Father was a wonderful man. If he had come into my room and said, Chris, let's go into business together, I would have run. And he would have run too. It would never even have occurred to him. Now, if my kids came in to my room and said, Dad, we'd like to go into business, I'd drop everything in a heartbeat. I know so many people, that's true. Now, they don't want to do it because they're off building their own careers. But there is this positive generational shift. Finally, I would say for most people, what you want to do is, I had mentioned time earlier, in the evenings, on the weekends, you want to develop your idea. You want to test your idea in the marketplace. You want to join organizations. You want to go to a co-sharing workspace. If there's a trade group and they're meeting in your town that does something along the lines that you're thinking of building your business, go to those meetings and talk to people. The thing about entrepreneurs, and this is, I think, very, very important, everyone thinks entrepreneurs are these grumpy people who can't work in an organization. They have to be the boss. And
that's,
you know,
not true. It's simply not
true. It's not true. It is totally not true. I think entrepreneurs are among the most generous sharers of knowledge, that people that you are going to end up competing with in some form or fashion will give you good information about thinking about pricing your product and developing a marketing strategy. They will impart their knowledge to you. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a big part of it. Reach out. Go to the incubators, go to the co-sharing workspaces, go to the industry meetings, test your idea out. You know, one advantage of the internet is you can do a little bit of selling. Find out, is this going to work? Is there a marketplace? Because we all have had that experience of an absolutely brilliant idea until you actually put it out there, and what you get back is silence. And you realize,
crickets. Yeah.
need to rethink this one, right?
Right.
So I do think testing, researching, working with other entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. you know, that's how you do it. And then you may have that moment that if you're lucky or you work, that you could grow this business. Yeah. Or you could keep it small. And that's a perfectly reasonable choice. And I think a lot of people keep it small by choice. Mm-hmm. But some people are going to say, hey, why not? I'm going to see where this goes.
For sure. I have, I hope I can share and love on a couple of clients that I have. It's a father and son team. Dad worked for decades for an alfalfa seed manufacturer, and the son comes with some agricultural, you know, they're a farming family.
Right.
And he came with the sales and kind of visionary side of it. And so they've teamed up, and they are doing some of the most innovative they're just completely disrupting how to coat seeds so that it can be more easily planted and starts faster and capitalize on maximizing the agricultural industry and even some of these, you know, newer types of farming that you can do now, you know, with marijuana and, you know, all the things that go along with that. Yeah. And so, and it's, it is so cool to see them kind of bring their two areas of expertise together and just, I mean, they're going gangbusters. I couldn't be happier for them, but they needed each other to make it work. And it's just, it's really incredible, frankly. So that was off topic a little bit, but like I can see how you take someone who's worked inside of a business for years and what they can, I don't know, bring to market once you give them some white space to think about it and think it through. And that's, it's so exciting for them. All right, so my next question is, we've talked a lot about boomers who have kind of done the transitional into retirement to start a new business. So what are some of the typical entrepreneur ventures you've seen them create? I mean, like in whatever that may be.
Okay. So as you know, it is actually remarkable how many ideas people come with a business that you would never have thought of. But I do think a lot of it is in the craft and artisan sectors of our economy. And one of the changes in our economy is that, you know, the craft businesses, they're kind of on the tributaries of our economy, on the sidelines. And it's really moved into the mainstream. And there is definitely a market of people who are willing, you know, they want to buy something that is handcrafted, something that is, you know, reflects an artisan sensibility, whether that's, you know, in terms of organic farming or restaurant or, you know, handmade soaps or whatever it is that people are doing. And so this craft side of the economy is really where I see a lot of activity going on. So, and I think that's important. The other is, on the other end, is people who resell their skills back to their previous organization. So you've quote unquote retired, right?
Yep.
And you've gone on and you say, you know, I have this skill and I'm going to have a, you know what, I bet if I go back to my old company, they could be my first customer. And I was just talking to someone the other day, and this has been her experience. And then she has other customers also, but what got her going was going back to her old company. They know her. She knows what they need in terms of skills, and she was solving problems for them. And so I think that's another place where you see, so that can be all across the board, depending, it doesn't matter what's for profit, not for profit, you know, all across the board in terms of having that skill, having that knowledge, and then becoming self-employed or joining up with a group of people and creating a business where you start selling back to the organizations that you used to work for. And that can be a really lucrative route to go. And the other is kind of a broader category, sort of social entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And this does seem to be a very strong drive that, you know, the reason why I call it purpose and a paycheck is that people do need that paycheck, but they also want that purpose. And many people have been professionals or they worked in the for-profit sector. They start thinking about the not-for-profit sector, working for a not-for-profit sector, or starting their own little social enterprise. And so, again, that can be a really fascinating business to get into, but you have to learn about fundraising and all kinds of things. It can be a very different world. But, again, I see a lot of activity there. There, I think it's actually the trouble there that people run into, it's not that hard to start a social enterprise. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to grow it. Mm-hmm. That's where you can run into some real difficulties. But again, I don't want to discourage anyone from trying to start their own social enterprise because you're giving back to society, you're trying to make society a better place, and you know, you're trying to do some good and at the same time make a living.
Sure. I love both the ideas of the craft and the social enterprising, and I can see elements of that even in my, I mean, it's everywhere in my community for sure. I also have a segment of clients that are in their early 60s, and they are completing master's certifications, higher level education, opening their own, you know, consulting or counseling practices, and just blowing it up. Have you found that additional next level education is a theme of going back to school and kind of getting that degree?
Yeah, so a couple of points in this. One is, as people are thinking about making this transition, one of the steps that everyone needs to take is kind of put your job title to the side and actually think very seriously about what are your skills. And there's a very big difference between skills and job title. Because your skills, you know, and once you have a sense of your skills, that's when you can say, you know what, I need some additional education. I think for most people, they're looking for a certificate, something, a legitimate certificate, but something that there's just maybe a couple of months as opposed to a couple of years. Colleges and universities are starting to recognize this market. Depending on where you are, there's some really good resources. A lot of places are still moving fairly slowly. Community colleges tend to be one of the richest resources to tap into if you need a particular skill or certificate. But ongoing education, one of the things that we're also talking about is the people who are starting their own business, who are continuing to work. They want a paycheck, but they also want to continue to learn. And they're learning in their organization, they're learning starting their own business. Learning and curiosity is sort of like a sub-theme to this whole discussion about working longer, and it's a really important one. But yes, I do think one of the people that I profile, she had been a nanny for most of her life, and that physically had just gotten to be difficult, and also she had grandchildren, and if she wanted to spend time with the grandchildren, and so she was a quilter, and that's what she did on the side, and so she got a certificate as a quilter to teach a particular type of quilting, and the numbers worked. Her daughter-in-law had an MBA, ran the numbers in terms of the cost and the education and what she could make in terms of training, and so that worked. And so again, that's a sort of sense of she got some additional education that she wanted to do. And the other advantage of it was that she could travel and stop in towns and teach some quilting. So,
and write up the again, travel and go to great destinations.
Exactly. So I think, you know, everyone needs to think about education, but you also, and this is now the plea to colleges and universities, yes, we all want to take that class in physics or Renaissance Italy that we never took, but more and more what people want is a class or classes that give them some skills because they're continuing to work. Colleges and universities too much also assume that if you're older, you're retired, and they want your money. But think about your alumni, your older alumni, they want to continue working. They want to get some skills. If you provide those skills for them, they're going to like you even more.
For sure. So you've just highlighted, you know, the idea of being able to travel, the flexible hours, the, you know, great opportunities with starting a business. In any of your interviews, what do you think is the number one challenge that they face?
So I think there's a couple of challenges. One is, okay, is this really a good idea? Which is what every entrepreneur faces.
I mean, at every age.
At every age. Yeah. And you don't know until you're out there in the market. The other thing is, and one thing that would encourage people is there's this sense of that I'm making this big step. And here's the thing. You're only making one step. You're going to make many more. And every entrepreneur I've ever talked to is you're going to pivot. So here's your plan. You thought it through. Now pivot 45 degrees. Because this is what the market is telling you. So it's being in that mindset. The other thing is, and this is a caution, make sure you pay your taxes along the way, because if you've been an employee all your life and your employer has, you know, handled that for you, and now all of a sudden you're on your own, no one's withholding taxes, they're just paying you what they owe you, it's your responsibility, it's a very easy way to fall into trouble. In fact, there are a number of programs now recognizing this that are out there to try and help people who are starting their own business not fall into that trap.
For sure.
And I think probably the final thing is you really do have to not risk too much money. I mean, you do have to come up with an idea that you're not going to be putting, you know, you're paying for your home for paying for your apartment or doing some of the travel that you want to. You don't want to be putting that at risk.
Right.
And so this is a time for planning. That word that we always hear, that word that we always haven't really done because life is busy and you're raising kids and you know, you're managing a home. And yes, I know I'm supposed to plan for retirement, but you know, come on, you know, that's years away. Well, now you're living those years. Now you want to start a business or you want to be self-employed. You really do have to plan and you think it through. It's worth the time to put into it, because once you start and you didn't put the planning in there, I think you end up in a very difficult situation. Well, I'm sure you've seen that. And then all of a sudden you're really scrambling and you're really scrambling behind the eight ball. So I would say planning is a real challenge for everybody. It's just it. Right. But we all have to do it.
As a coach, that's the number one thing that I insist, and I don't mean that lightly. Everyone has a plan. Everyone's working their plan towards the bigger goal. And I think it's one of the talents that I get to bring to the table with clients is most people don't know how to plan. And especially when you're talking about businesses and outside their skill sets. So that part and the taxes being probably, I'd say, one of the number one challenges of businesses at every level. And especially with businesses who have been employees for however long they've been an employee for. Like it's a new
it's
element.
It's not part of your mindset. You don't even think about
right.
it, right?
Yeah, right.
Because it's just done and then you file your taxes. And maybe you get some additional income on the side, but you don't. It's not like when you get that dollar, which you work pretty hard for, mm-hmm. and you probably, you know, and then you look at that dollar and say, well, okay, I made a dollar. I'm not actually going to start dividing this dollar up right away.
Right. I truly do believe that what I'm doing, at least in my career at this point in my life, is something that I would never retire from. I love it that much. And I know that kind of as a U.S. Population, we expect to retire by age mid-60s.
Right.
Do you think we're thinking about that the wrong way as a
yes,
society?
As a society, I do. And I ask you what you look at the numbers now. Excuse me. You look at the numbers now, the majority of people don't retire
right.
in the traditional sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's part-time work, it's flexible work, it's bridge jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a number of different things that people do. Some people who retire actually go back to work after a year or two, and I think that's becoming increasingly common. Mm-hmm. So we have this image of the lifespan. You go to school, you work really hard, you retire, and you embrace leisure. But if you actually look at what's going on, people lose their jobs along the way. That period of time they're working hard, people lose their jobs. Mm-hmm. And they have a medical setback. And they have to take some time off to caregive for aging parents or a young child who's gotten sick, or whatever it is that life intervenes with. And then we have this image that once you hit 65, of course you're supposed to not be working,
right.
And then people are working. And so I think we have the wrong image that there's this John Kenneth Galbraith, who was a great economist, and he wrote this essay. It's in the Encyclopedia Britannica. He wrote it at age 90, and he called it the Still Syndrome, because he was being afflicted by people who are nearing retirement who would come up to him and they would say, you're still working out? You're still drinking? You're still working? And then his favorite was, you're still alive? And he wrote the same, and he wrote for another 7 years. And I think that the perspective, I mean, if I were, you know, to take a step back and say, you know, really, young people graduating today are facing, from college, mm-hmm. are facing 60 to 70 year careers.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
It is a long time.
So think that, you know, so therefore, you want to build change into those 60 to 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it may be you don't want to work that hard. You have a child that's going to be going off to college next year, or maybe you want to downshift during that period of time. Maybe you want to stop working for that period of time. So because once they leave, That's the beginning. They're out the door. And other times you may want to go back to school, pick up some additional education. You may want to go on to work for the nonprofit sector. They want to go to the for-profit sector. So what I would encourage people to do is not to be thinking about retirement. It's thinking about what I want to do next. And what I want to do next isn't about a promotion. It isn't about how much money can I make if I make a shift. It's about what do I want to do next for me or for my family or for my community that I think is worthwhile at this period of time. And I may do this for 5, 6, 10 years, and then I may shift to something else and put my energies elsewhere. And so it's not about school, work, retirement. Mix them all together throughout a lifetime. Embrace leisure when you're younger. That's actually
such good advice
I could ever give anybody.
That is such good advice.
Have it. And that's the wisdom of not having done that. Embrace right. leisure when you're younger. Okay. And embrace work when you're older.
For sure. Yeah, excellent advice. I reflect on thinking about, like, we have some major industry businesses here. So, like, we have Hewlett-Packard and Micron. And you hear, even in schools and universities, you get incentivized for taking early retirement or getting, you know, the go-away package, right? Which I know that that does launch a lot of new businesses because they're at a point where they go, you know what? I could do something different.
That's right.
But we still incentivize. I feel like there's a miss opportunity, and sometimes it's needed for people to move on. But
yeah.
Why do you think this is?
So I think that we haven't caught up with the fact that we're better educated.
Okay.
That we're healthier than previous generations. Mm-hmm. That, you know, a 65-year-old today on average is the same health as a 55-year-old was a generation ago. We just haven't caught up with that. And if you think about the people who are in their mid-50s, early 60s at the companies that you talked about, by and large, on average, looking at the statistics, they're healthy, they're well educated, they still have a lot to offer, many, many more years. And so I think with the tight labor market we have these days, more and more companies aren't looking at people in their late 50s, early 60s and wondering, when are you going to retire?
Right.
What they're kind of saying is, how can I keep you around for a little while longer? Because you have skill and I'm having trouble finding the workers that I need. And so there is a shift in society somewhat. But what I read for those workers, they have a lot of opportunities. So here's my thing that I would say is, look, you know you're going to get a good 401k package, some sort of a good retirement package. Spend a couple of years thinking about what is it you want to do next. Because when you get that retirement package, you want to walk out the door and you want to know or have a pretty good idea, here's what I'm going to do. Now, what I may do is not do anything for a year. But you kind of have an idea at the end of that year where you're going to be going. You may walk out that door and say, I'm going to the nonprofit sector because this really bothers me. And I have nurtured relationships with this nonprofit, and they can't wait for me to retire because they know exactly what I can do. So it's that planning thing. Think about what it is you want to do next. And if it turns out that you are voluntarily retiring or involuntarily retiring, if you've gone through that exercise of what do I want to do next, you have a plan.
Excellent. Can you tell us about your new book, Purpose with a Paycheck, and who did you write that for?
So I wrote that for three groups of people, okay? So one group of people is anybody who's 50 and over and thinking about, you know, where is this all going? What am I going to be doing? You know, retirement, which was that abstract thing, is actually becoming a little bit real. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm hoping with this book does is say there's a lot of opportunities here, there's a lot of options here, and you have a lot to offer our society. So let's, you know, think about it and figure out what it is that's really going to do well by you. Mm-hmm. Part of it is also talking to policymakers and management and heads of organizations. Hey, these experienced workers, they have a lot to offer you. They have a lot. And the third is to say, younger people. So my youngest is 27 years old. So when he's 50, he's going to have a very different image of the second half of life than I did when I was 50. it's going to be very, very different. There's going to be a lot more opportunities, a lot more options. You know, right now, when you retire from a company, most companies, you get a 401k, right? That's part of the package. Well, here's the thing. For younger people, my suspicion is they're going to have, you want an encore career? Here's a package that will help you have an encore career. You want to start your own business? Here's a package that's going to help you start your own business. Company benefits? Hey, you know what? We'll pay for you to go to this incubator and take some classes on starting your own business there because you're valuable. We know you're going to leave at some point, but hey, we'll help you start your own business. That's what I imagine, that there is going to be this greater options, more formal, institutionalized on-ramps and off-ramps, and society will be much better.
I love your vision. I think that's fantastic. Chris, what is the best way for people to either connect with you, and where should people follow you? Like, where would I send listeners if they want to find out more?
So there's a couple things. So I'm at my home base is Minnesota Public Radio, and so I do a lot with Minnesota Public Radio. I have a series of conversations on the creative economy, as you mentioned in the book, which is available at Amazon and Barnes and Noble. I have my own website, cferrell.net, I write a bi-weekly column for PBS Next Avenue, which is the online magazine targeted at the 50-plus population, and I highly recommend it. Of course, I have a self-interest in that, but I do highly recommend it. I love writing for it, and, you know, we're dealing specifically with rethinking, reimagining the second half of life to be much more fulfilling.
That's awesome. Chris, you have been a pleasure to speak with this afternoon. I very much thank you for the time you spent with us here this afternoon. And
well,
I do encourage our listeners to reach out and check out Chris's website, which is cferrell.net. Yes?
Yes.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Okay.